I want to get you, if you would, to be turning with me to the book of Hebrews. The book of Hebrews. This is where we're going to spend our time tonight. And this letter to the Hebrews is one of the most important letters in all of the New Testament, especially when we get into it. And it's one of the most powerful ones that you'll encounter in the New Testament, especially. And while we do not know who the writer was, we can only speculate, and we do not know the specific audience to which he was writing, there are some things that we do know. And one of those is this. He had a desire for those who were his readers. If you look in chapter 10, down in verse 39, he makes a statement there. His desire is that those who would read this letter would not shrink back from their faith, or he, as he put it, he says, "We are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith to the preserving of the soul." It is the idea that they keep the faith, that they not shrink back from the faith. But in order for this to happen, there is something else that his readers needed to do. You'll notice back in chapter 6, there in verses 11 and 12, he tells them what that is. Here's the way he puts it. He says, "And we desire that each one of you show the same diligence, so as to realize the full assurance of hope until the end, so that you will not be sluggish," but notice this, "but imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises." He said, "I want you to be imitators of those who through patience and our faith and patience inherit the promises." In chapter 10, and then verse 34, he describes these Christians to whom he's writing as those who, he says in verse 34, have accepted joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing, he said, that you have a better possession and a lasting one. Here's my question. How did they know? How did they know that they had a better possession? How did they know that that possession was a lasting possession? Well, chapter 11 is kind of our answer to all of this tonight. Because chapter 11 comes in verse 1, you have this. He tells us, now faith is the, King James uses the word substance. New American Standard uses the word assurance of things hoped for. And then it goes on to say the evidence or the conviction of things not seen. So if you take the first verse of chapter 11, and you go back and you look at verse 34 of chapter 10, here's what you have. This knowledge that he speaks of in verse 34, this assurance, he calls it, he says they knew they had a better possession and a lasting one. He now calls that knowledge faith. He calls it faith. And before we take up where we're going to spend the majority of our time tonight, which is in chapter 11, verses 4 through 6. I want you, if you will, to take a look one more time in chapter 10 at two more verses. In verses 35 and 36, here in chapter 10, listen to what he says. He says, "Therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which is a great reward, for you have need of endurance, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised." There's one phrase there that I really want you to pay attention to, maybe underline and remember. You have need of endurance. Brethren, we have need of endurance. We dare not take our faithfulness for granted. Nor should we take the faithfulness of our children for granted. Nor should we take the faithfulness of this congregation for granted. No, we have to give earnest attention to our own faithfulness, to the faithfulness of those in our families, to the faithfulness of our congregation, or else our faith will decay, it will drift away. What happens to a house You may buy the most beautiful house, but if that house is not maintained, if once in a while you don't put a little paint on it, if once in a while you don't clean the exterior, if you don't mow the lawn, if you don't go through and vacuum and clean and do all of the things that are the things necessary to maintain a house, what happens to that house? It begins to decay. It begins to have problems. And finally, the house will crumble. And that's true of every physical thing that we can think about. And it's true of our faith as well. And so where I want to spend our time is here in chapter 11, specifically verses 1 through 6, but primarily our focus is going to be, well, all six of these verses. But if you'll notice something he says here, in verse 1, he tells us that faith has two things. It's two things. It's composed of two things. Number one, he says it's being sure of God's promises. That is, God's promises are worth us putting our hope into. Or as he says it, the substance of things hoped for. But secondly, our faith is also being sure that the invisible God and his hand in creation do in fact exist. Or, as he puts it, the evidence of things not seen. In verse 2, he tells us that it's by this kind of faith that the men of old gained approval. And that word approval, that of the Greek, is going to be used three more times in the passage we're going to look at tonight, but it's not translated approval anywhere else in what you will be looking at tonight. He means they pleased God. They gained God's approval in their lives. Well, if you look at the lives of the two individuals from the Old Testament that he uses as his illustration, he uses, first of all, Abel, who was the second son of Adam and Eve. He uses another man that we encounter in Genesis 5. The only time we read about him, his name is Enoch. He is the seventh generation down from Adam. And I want you to notice these two individuals and what he says about them. First of all, let's take Abel. There in verse 4, he says this, "By faith, Abel offered a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained the testimony." That word testimony is the same Greek word from which we get approval back in verse 2. "That he was righteous, God testifying," there's that word again, God giving his approval, "about his gifts, and through faith, though he is dead, he still speaks." The focus here is upon Abel and the fact that God approved Abel's offering. He counted Abel righteous. He was pleased with Abel's offering. And here's the key. The key to Abel's offering is that that offering was offered through faith. And so the point is, it's not just what we do that matters, but it's also how we do what we do that matters. You see, our actions express the assurance of those things we hope for. But then here's the second one, the second illustration, Enoch. In verse 5, he says this, "By faith, Enoch was taken up so that he would not see death. And he was not found because God took him, for he obtained the witness." There's that word again. Same word as approval, testimony, testified. Here it is, the final time. "He obtained the witness that before his being taken up, he was pleasing to God." Two times in Genesis chapter 5, in verses 22 and 24, back in Genesis chapter 5, Moses says something about Enoch. He says that Enoch walked with God. What the writer here is concluding is that by faith, Enoch pleased God by walking with God. And as a result, God blessed him by translating him into heaven. Now here's the question. What does our faith, what does faith have to do with all of this? If you go back and you look at the two different examples that he has just shared with us, the example of Abel and Abel's offering of his sacrifice, and also Enoch and Enoch's faithful walk with God, there is a word that will never come up in either one of those two stories. It's the word faith. Read through Genesis 5. Go back and look at Cain and Abel in Genesis 4, and you will not find it. It's not there. No, the writer has chosen these two to illustrate his principle, and that is the principle is in verse 2. By faith, men of old gained approval. But faith is not mentioned in either of the two stories. So what is he doing? Where is he gathering all this from? You see, he sees faith in these stories. He sees faith in these stories not because it's mentioned, but because these men did it and God was pleased with them. And he brings something out. If you'll notice the end of verse 5 here in Hebrews chapter 11, he says something. He obtained the witness that before his being taken up, he was pleasing to God. Now, look at verse 6, the very next verse, and look at what he says. And without faith, it is impossible to please him, that is to please God. You see, what the writer is saying to us is that without faith, it's impossible to please God. Therefore, it is an accepted fact that both Abel and Enoch did what they did in faith, and that their acting in faith is a way that their lives please God. Abel offered his better sacrifice in faith. That pleased God. Enoch walked with God. That pleased God. And the writer concludes that this offering and this fellowship with God was done in faith, because without faith it's impossible to please God. So here is where we're at tonight. Folks, why is it that faith pleases God? Have you ever stopped to ask yourself that question? Why is it that what I do in faith pleases God? Because he's making that argument that without faith, you can't please God. He tells us, verse 6, without faith it's impossible to please God. And then he comes back and says this, for he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him, or those who seek him. There are two parts to this faith that pleases God. Number one, faith believes that God exists. And number two, faith believes that God is the rewarder. He rewards those who seek him. And because of faith, because of this type of faith, these two things please God. The writer doesn't say why this pleases God. He just says, this is what pleases God. To believe that he is, and to believe that he rewards those who diligently seek him. So here's where we are tonight. There are two great facts, if you will, about God. Simple facts, but powerful facts. First one is this. God is real. Remember, without faith it's impossible to please God, for he who comes to God must believe that he is. First fact, God is real. And what I mean by that is God exists absolutely. God did not come into being. God will never cease to exist. God is not becoming. God is not growing. God is not changing. God is always the same. As a matter of fact, if you go to Genesis chapter 3, verse 14, and Moses is there at the burning bush, and God is speaking with him, and he asks God, whom shall I say has sent me? And God's response is, I am who I am. That is his name. God absolutely is. And God is pleased when we recognize this and we embrace that absolute existence of God. But then there's the second fact. Remember, fact number one, God is real. But here's fact number two. Our God is a rewarding God. He rewards. God has no need that you give anything to Him. He has no need for anyone to supply anything because God has no needs. No, God is the one who is constantly full. As a matter of fact, God is overflowing with self-sufficiency. God is the one who is always able to give to us. He doesn't need our service. But instead, God is for us the source of life. God is the source of energy. He is the source of joy. He is the source of all goodness, all beauty, all power. It's as James said, every good and perfect gift comes down from the Father of lights, in whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. That is God. That is the God that we know. And it pleases God when we come to Him in a way that affirms that He is a rewarding God. And He delights in us doing that. So folks, this is what faith does. Faith goes to God with the confidence that my God exists. And my God rewards me when I spend my life seeking Him. That's what faith does. That's why faith pleases God. And there's another way that we could put that. And that is that what pleases God is when we display in our lives, every day that we live, when we display how real we believe God to be and how rewarding that we believe He is. Folks, that's faith. And it's what this world needs to see every day. They need to see somebody that believes there is a God who is real, who isn't a figment of people's imagination, who isn't just some made-up being to satisfy our longing for something greater than ourselves, but there is a God who is real and we believe that, and they need to see people who believe that that God rewards them and is pleased when they seek Him. And so, as I've said, faith has these two convictions, if you will, these two components. One component is this. It is the conviction that there is a great unseen God who exists absolutely and does not depend upon us in the least. The second is this, and that is that there is an assurance within us that this great unseen God is a God of love, a God of grace, a God of bounty, a God of blessing. And He does that for everyone who seeks Him in truth. And as I said a moment ago, we live in a time where folks' faith is vulnerable. It's precious, but it's vulnerable. People are being told all around us and have been told for some time that if you really want to find out what Christian faith is, then you just need to consult your felt needs. What are your needs? That'll help you understand faith. No, that's not how we come to understand faith. We come to understand faith by consulting the nature of God. We come to know faith by knowing God. And we come to know God by spending our time right here. Because this is God's communication with us to say, this is who I am. This is what I seek from you. This is what I want to do for you. This is what I expect. And what I want to say to you tonight is this. If you want your faith to be strong, your faith, if you want it to be strong, if you want your soul to be strong, If you want the faith of your children, the faith of those in your family to be strong, if you want the faith of this church to be strong, then we need to know God. We need to know God. And as Paul said in his sermon on Mars Hill, he's not far from any one of us. And he will allow us to find him if we diligently seek him. The more you know him, the more you will be assured of the things that you hope for, and the more you will be convinced of those things that you don't see. My question for you tonight is this: how well do you know God? Do you know him enough to put your faith in him? Do you believe that he's real? Do you believe that he has control of everything in your life, can do whatever he desires at any point in time, can make your life better, can give you great joy, strength, and reassurance? Faith is the assurance of things hoped for. It's the evidence of things not seen. We don't see God, but we believe in him. And we are assured that what he has promised is going to come to pass. He has promised that one day his son is coming back. And one day that son is going to judge the world in righteousness. My prayer for each one of us in this room is that we will be those that he says, well done. But maybe you're here tonight and you know, my life is not a Christian life. My life has never been given to him in obedient faith. I've heard many sermons. I've listened to many people talk about Jesus, but I have never made the decision in my own life to give that life to him. Why not tonight? Why not choose tonight to give your life in obedient faith to him, to confess the name of Christ, and to repent of your sin and to be buried with him in baptism? Why not tonight come to know, truly know, that God is real and that God wants you to know him, to seek him, to honor him with your life? Lynn has selected an invitation song. It is to invite us. If you need to come, won't you do so as together we stand and sing.